Empire of the Suns.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Wet like on book. Wet like on book. Wet like on book.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
Hello there and welcome to another episode of the Empire of the Suns podcast. My name is Kellen Olson and I don't know why I'm doing my voice like this, but I am. My co-host person who talks with me too. What a great intro. It's Kevin Zimmerman. Hey, Kev, how's it going?
You keeping that one?
Yep.
Okay, here we go. We're going.
Oh, I forgot about last time where I just butchered everything. Try to put that in the past, Kevin. Try to move on.
Today, on the Empire of the Suns podcast, Monty Williams was introduced finally. It seemed like he was hired like a month ago. And while the Lakers continue to do Lakers stuff, the Suns like look reasonable still. And it's been a few weeks? I don't even know. Anyways, Monty, I would say he won the press conference, but everyone usually wins the press conference. What was your main takeaway about what he said today?
It was foreign to hear a new Suns head coach talk about their past mistakes as an NBA head coach and how they've learned from them, because they haven't brought in someone who was a past NBA head coach for a while now. Of course, Jay Triano and some other guys who have had the interim tag or whatnot, but the permanent hire is Monty, and he has these 5 years to go off of. He mentioned it in a lot of different ways, too. I think one of the more important things that he talked about was New Orleans. He had two different teams. He had the Chris Paul team in the first year, where he immediately found out that he can't be as hands-on as he normally is and more he has to be more accommodating to the players and kind of trusting them. And he said that he would just basically look at Chris Paul and like Chris would basically call the game himself, because he didn't need Monty to do anything there because he's Chris Paul. But then the team got blown up and he went back to a young team, and that's where he started being more hands-on and he kind of changed and adapted his style. And it sounds like at least the pitch that he was giving, and I don't want to call it a pitch, that's kind of rude to like, it makes me sound like I'm calling him a liar or whatever. But what he told us was that he believes that he has really grown and changed from those years. He thought he was a lot more arrogant, and he thought that he didn't have as good of a way of talking through players that he believed. I believe he said he had to figure out the difference between telling players like it is and the truth and embarrassing them. And yeah, he was just too often embarrassing players and berating them probably a little bit too much. And that is extremely relevant for the Suns, because there are a lot of players that deserve to be berated on this team constantly just with the way they've played in 19 games. And it's gonna, even if they bring in some marquee names, let's say they bring in Kyrie Irving and Anthony Davis, which is never ever gonna happen, and I'm not encouraging that or whatever, but Devin Booker and TJ Warren and whoever else is left over from these teams the past couple of years, even the new guys DeAndre and Mikal Bridges, they already built up some losing habits on this team because they were on a 19-win basketball team under a first-year head coach that got fired. That's just the way that works. So to hear him acknowledge and be able to kind of not just scream at them and tell them how much they suck and all this kind of stuff and build through it more is encouraging. But I think it comes back to, I remember Igor's press conference. We were all really impressed by him. We all loved hearing him call DeAndre Ayton a center. We all loved hearing Monty say that Devin Booker's not going to play just on the ball or off the ball. He's going to do both. And that's usually how these things go.
Yeah, I think we all kind of knew. He actually said on Bickley and Murata that his reputation is weird, in that he just has this aura where people think the world of him. And I think that kind of started with the death of his wife, where, you know, if you haven't seen it, go on YouTube and watch his speech at her funeral and just like how like steady he is for being in that awful situation. But you hear, like, you see, like, today we saw more of that genuine, here are my faults. Like, he admitted to faults as a coach, but he also said, he was addressing the Josh Jackson situation. He's like, I did dumb things when I was that age. I just didn't get caught. And I think that's like kind of the power of like people really believing in him, whether it's James Jones or Robert Sarver or players, where Like, he has all these different life experiences, and he's willing to share them for teaching moments. And I think, along with all the basketball he's accumulated and the knowledge there, that's huge, because he's going to have to connect with Devin Booker. He's going to have to connect with DeAndre Ayton. And he even said that they're going to fly around the country, him and James, and just, like, hook up with players and meet with them and just seeing how they're doing this summer, just to get to know them, which I think, I don't know if that's standard, but that seems like a good plan, or at least just very conscious. We have to build trust. We have to build this from the ground up, and it starts with his relationship with players. He even was like, oh, I might even go to the Bahamas, which, of course, you want to go to the Bahamas. Oh, yeah, there happens to be a guy, DeAndre Ayton, might be in the Bahamas at some point if he's not in Phoenix. So, yeah, I think he did a good job, and it was really enlightening to see him talk about all this stuff.
I also enjoyed, and part of what I wrote about on the site was that he seems to understand the modern concepts of basketball and reinforcing them, and just, you can tell that he's spent a lot of time looking at the teams like the Warriors, and when he was with the Spurs, looking at them and saying, okay, what exactly, yes, they have all these super talented players, yes, they have this great, all this stuff, but what exactly makes them tick? And he mentioned the ball movement offensively, and just guys consistently keeping the ball movement, and he called it the wear down effect the Spurs have, where by the fourth quarter, your defense is so worn out by how much they're constantly moving around that they go on a fourth quarter run as they always do, and they win the game from there. And that's good to hear and all that, but at the same time, you can fall into a trap really easily at these things. And Earl Watson had a lot of modern concepts too. He was very in tune with, we need to shoot threes, we need to defend the three-point line, things like that. I mean, he also had some archaic philosophies.
His early offense was just a little off.
But exactly. And when we actually saw what the offense was, it was questionable, to say the least. So I think that you can only draw so much from these things. But yeah, everyone, that's not to say you're wrong if you feel impressed by him, because you should be, because he came off really well. And it was great to hear that he's already watched film of Booker, and he mentioned watching film of Ayton, because he also mentioned with Jones that they're the types of basketball heads to just constantly be thinking about this stuff. And I think Igor was that guy too. I think Earl Watson was that guy as well. But I keep saying encouraging, because that's really all that these things can do, is encourage you more so. And that's really what I took away from it. Was there any sort of expectation you had coming in that maybe changed after you heard him talk? Because I think for me, it was just hearing the basketball stuff, because I didn't really know much in that end. I just knew about the pedigree he had as a leader and as a person and all that.
I don't think so. I think James Jones is on the radio, like, right as they announced him being the coach, and he said, like, this guy doesn't pretend to know all the answers, and he's very open to new ideas. And I think just researching and writing about basically his resume, which sounds like, well, yeah, he was at this stop and this stop and this stop, what can you learn from that? But he's been around so many different types of people, like stars. He was on a team with probably a future Hall of Famer every stop, and every stop as an assistant and head coach too. I mean, he had so many guys that were different. And so I think that really has played into him being willing to adjust and change his style, where he doesn't really have a style necessarily. It's just, you should come to work excited, work hard, and we're going to tweak things and fit it to the roster. And with Booker and Ayton, that's playing through both of them, which I'm sure was a sticking point with Igor, where he did not exactly play through Ayton. I think that's basketball X's and O's. The most interesting part of this is how he involves Ayton in, as far as playmaking, because they're going to run the offense through him and Booker more than just Booker, I think.
When he was talking about framing his offense, defense philosophies around the roster, and it's just not being done yet, and they have to, him and James have to do a lot of talking once they figure out the roster, I think it was a reminder of how far they have to go in terms of we look at the team and we see Ayton, Booker, Bridges, Jackson, Warren, Melton, Okobo, all these guys, and we say they have this great foundation of young talent. I don't really think it's a foundation. It's a collection more so, but there are serious pieces of the foundation missing that need to go in place, which is it seems very obvious that someone in their late 20s, early 30s has to come in at the power forward position or the point guard position that can play the game at a pretty decent level to help these guys get to a certain point. Now they're probably going to go more young than that. It sure seems like it. Gambo was emphatic on the radio earlier, I believe on Monday, saying that the Suns are not getting Mike Conley. They're not going to do it. And we can hit on that a little bit later. But the main thing is going to be, okay, how much is that going to impact his ability to get his job done, right? Because now we're on the, when Igor didn't have a point guard, it was like, he doesn't have a point guard, what can he do, and that kind of stuff. I don't think we were actually talking about it and how it impacts him until about 10 to 15 games into the season, where it was like, oh yeah, he has to start Isaiah Kanan because what other choice does he have right now? And so we talked about that like at the beginning of the season, not 10 or 15 games in. So with Monty, it's going to be even on like mid-July. If we're at mid-July and the Suns don't have that guy yet, let's say they trade for Aaron Gordon or they trade for Lonzo Ball, and that's one of their two moves, and they don't make another one. It's like, okay, you got another inexperienced, are we sure that they're good young piece that's talented and everything, but where is the proven commodity that he can rely on the floor? Because the biggest reason why I like the Trevor Ariza move, and I wrote about it right when it happened, was this is a guy that Igor can look at and say, I can trust you for 25 to 30 minutes a game. You are smirking because it turned out you could not trust him for 25 to 30 minutes a game. I think that those three guys, Ayton, Booker, and Bridges, are the only three guys on the roster right now. Oubre is a fourth, I think, who you can look at. And maybe I'm being harsh on TJ Warren here, but those are the four guys on the roster right now that you can look at and say, for how long they're going to be on the court and what they do on the court and what their roles are within that, you can trust them to get that done to a competent enough level. I think Ayton proved that by the end of the year that he can be that guy. He's an overall positive. Mikal, same thing. Kelly, same thing with his improved play from Washington. TJ, it's just who knows and what his role is. But where are those extra three to four guys? Because sure, maybe you can trust Aaron Gordon or Lonzo Ball or anyone like that that's in their early 20s that they might acquire or try and sign. Terry Rozier comes to mind as well. But they need someone to step up from that's right next to Booker and Ayton in terms of responsibility. And I keep looking back to Monty and just saying, okay, if Ayton and Booker are his two guys, are like his two top guys going into next season without a doubt, it's going to be really hard for him to turn this around quickly, which is what they want to do. They want to win 30-plus games next year. That's an 11-12-win improvement.
I'll say if you do get a lot out of Ayton, it's more of the numbers of those guys that you're talking about than just a superior, like, starter-caliber guy. Like, I think you can throw Tyler Johnson in this. Like, he could be a backup, like, first guard off the bench type.
I would put him in that. With the way he played, I would put him in that group of guys you can trust.
Yeah.
I think you can trust him.
So I think it's just more of they just had maybe five guys, and then when three of them get hurt, you're done. You're toast.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think what you're trying to say, too, is they have a lot of work to do just roster construction-wise, and I think you pointed it out with what you wrote, that he's very conscious, and that was good that he's saying, it wasn't like, these are our guys right now, as James Jones has done a lot. It was, we have to wait and see what this team will look like. We have to wait and see strengths and weaknesses, because on May 21st, we don't really know. And hopefully, like, it seems like him and James Jones and Jeff Bauer are really, I mean, they have an established relationship, but them working in concert with one another is super important for this, right? Because I think James Jones has started going after a certain type of guy, like Kelly, Tyler Johnson were those dudes who are just going to work hard regardless of talent. And if Monty agrees with that, which I think he does, and it fits him with those guys James already brought in, then it's going to be a lot more work still to add more of those guys, I guess.
kind of the point that I was getting at, and I think you were getting at too, and something I want to present to you and the listeners without me even knowing if I agree with what I'm gonna about to say is, but I think that...
That's how you do it, just this, say stuff.
Yeah, this might sound completely obvious and I'm being just oblivious and dumb, but I believe what I'm getting at is I believe that you are leaving yourself open to the chance of this actually not working if you don't give Monty Williams a traditional basketball roster to work with. Because the Suns last year, they didn't have a point guard, so that immediately crossed them off. But then they also had a first-year center who they were relying on to be their second. Or this was your big red flag. We had our preseason podcast, and I just remember you saying, it's probably not good, right, that they're relying on DeAndre Ayton to be like their second or third best player. Like, that's probably an issue.
It might be a problem, yes.
And to go back to the point that I was making earlier, if they don't have that third guy that can, in my opinion, it has to be someone who you can like debate that they're better than Booker on some nights. Like, and that's where I go to like Conley and Holiday, and expectations are probably too high for that, but that's just what I feel like they need. They need at least like a third banana to come in.
Can we even just saying someone who's, yeah, better than Ayton?
Better than Ayton, yes. That's a better way of saying it.
Because, sure. I mean, if Booker takes another step, blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
Booker's probably too good for that discussion, but hopefully. You need to bring in someone that can be better than Ayton on most nights, I would even say. And if you can bring in that big three and then also just fill out the roster and not look at it and say, sure, you can look at this and say, okay, they're relying on Elie Okobo to be the backup point guard, or they're relying on Bridges and Jackson to take the backup two guard minutes. Stuff like that is not really what I'm talking about, but I'm saying you look at the fundamental construction of the roster. You've got that guy that can be better than Ayton on some nights. Let's just say that's Mike Conley, even if we know it's now not going to be. And then at power forward, you add someone who is reliable and you can just count on to give you those types of minutes. Thad Young's probably a little bit too high end for what I'm talking about. But in that Tyler Johnson, TJ Warren tier of, yeah, they're acceptable, and that's who you can play. And maybe it is TJ Warren, the guy who's playing at the four. And then you just have plans in place for backups, because I think the overall thing I'm getting to here is it's going to be so much easier for Monty to then focus on what he is instilling and what he is trying to do, because Igor couldn't even get that far until 40 games into the year.
Yeah.
And Monty can run into that same situation because of what the front office doesn't do for him. And back to what I originally wrote on Igor, that the Suns failed him. And I think there is still a really good chance that the Suns could fail Monty Williams. And like I said, in mid-July, we're going to have a podcast and we're going to focus specifically on this point and be like, okay, the collection of the team, where is it at in terms of helping Monty Williams get to where he needs to get these guys? Because he is going to help them slowly improve, but I don't think that is what they brought him here for. They brought him here to slowly improve, but they also brought him here because they're expecting to win 30-plus games next year, and it's on the front office to have the players. I've said to multiple people asking about offseason expectations, if they don't bring in that player that is better than Ayton on most nights, this season is a gigantic failure. I think they need to bring in two of those guys, actually, and I'm counting Oubre as one. I think if Oubre is back, he counts as one. And that's not a given, but if he comes back, he's one. And then the two is either the point guard or the power forward. If you bring in two of those guys, it's a successful offseason. If it's not, it's a gigantic failure, because that's the position they've put themselves in right now.
Yeah, because otherwise you're asking Ayton to be, what, a second-year center who is raw already, who's made great strides, but I don't... Like, if we're wrong and he's just the second best player night in and night out, that's really good news, but you can't bank on that. Like, and that doesn't mean he'll be good or bad in the future. It's just the reality is you need that guy who's that consistent, I think.
And the reality is he wasn't the takeover guy in the first year. Burns and Gamba over and over again. It's like, where's the 2020 game? Where's the game where he just flat out dominates? And we only had like three or four of those the entire year.
I think that's why Kelly's important now when we talk about this, because, and actually Kelly and Mikel were the two guys that Monty specifically said he's spoken to. I kind of took that as in person, but like Kelly showed at the end of the year that he's at least the consistent energy guy. Like maybe he was not going to get 25 points every night, but he's going to do the little things and have that kind of identity to the team. It's you need one other serious starter to come in.
So I've already brought up Conley a couple of times, but was there anything that Williams said in terms of his mind and everything in his relationship, probably this more so, his relationship with James Jones and their dialogue that made you think anything in terms of the offseason? Because for me, the ball handling thing stuck out. It's like, okay, you need guys that can make quick, competent decisions. That's where immediately Jarrett Culver pops into my head. That's just the first guy. It's like, if you're looking for that type of guy who can make quick, balanced type of player, you're looking for playoff players, essentially, because he labeled Booker as that, and I think that's something that seems important to him if it came up naturally off the top of his head like that. I think Culver came to mind, and then a point guard came to mind for me as too. Like, Lonzo, obviously, is a guy that comes to mind when you're talking just moving the ball quickly and making decisions.
Yeah, he did. He was asked, what, about whether Devin Booker will play on the ball, off the ball, and he said it's both. And, yeah, to me, no one really came to mind. It was more point guard. Yeah, because you need someone to do that. And I like that, his thought about when he was asked about basketball philosophy as far as offense goes, where he's just like, you just need to make a quick play standing around. Like, that's where teams get bit. And that's coming from a guy who coached a lot of Chris Paul pounding the ball into the ground stuff, which is interesting. But he also said, look, if Booker's, I can't take away Booker being Booker and trying to take over games. That's where I think we go back to his adapting. He's going to try to find a fine line between Booker over dribbling, taking on too much, and freeing him up and allowing him to work off the ball and not limiting anyone, but trying to guide them in the right direction to keep the ball moving. So I think a lot of this is just more philosophy than scheme, I guess. Like, Igor's scheme was like, if you fit into this, you're going to be have plays run for you, whatever. But he had a system. Like, that was without question. So I think this is a really different kind of course change. I don't know if it's good or bad, but we'll see.
To wrap, but not really, because I want to talk about this a little bit. There are two different subjects that came up in the past week through Conley, which I mentioned, and then a conversation about Anthony Davis, and someone on SB Nation, I'm blanking on their name right now, wrote something that said, this is why we should consider the Suns as an Anthony Davis suitor. Points 1 through 6 were that the Suns are stupid, which I thought was smart, actually, to put that, because, yes, they need to be stupid to do this. But then the other points were including Anthony DeAndre Ayton in the deal. And both of those, Conley and the Davis thing, kind of brought to my attention a divide that the fan base, and any fan base in general, I think, really struggles to keep themselves honest in. And I say themselves, I should say ourselves, because I, too, often struggle with figuring out where your realistic expectations should lie for something. Because the Anthony Davis conversation, Max put up a poll on Twitter just asking, if Davis seemed encouraged by what was going on in Phoenix, would you make this trade? And that's with the chance that he would leave still. And I said no, because I believe that Ayton, Booker, Bridges, and what they have going on right now projects pretty safely into at least a couple years in the playoffs if it hangs around. And if you trade Ayton for 1 year Anthony Davis and he bolts, which has a decent chance of happening, you're looking at a 15-year playoff drought probably, if Anthony Davis doesn't get you to the playoffs, which he could and he probably would. But on the off chance that didn't happen, now you're looking at 15, 20 years out of the playoffs, because Booker is going to want to leave because there's nothing here then. And that type of conversation brought on championship expectations and being like, well, I want championship upside, and AD brings that, and you can get AD. I don't think this group has championship upside. And it's a balance of looking at expectations. And that's where I go to Conley, and I hear Gambo saying it's a dumb suggestion, he's too old, he makes too much money, and all this kind of stuff. And I think you just have to zoom out and look at Monty Williams, for example, and say, I believe, again, it was Max getting a lot of shout outs now, that replied earlier today to someone and said, like, the Mark Jackson to Steve Kerr thing, we don't have to worry about that right now. We just need the Mark Jackson. I think that's a really smart way of describing Monty Williams, is that you can be apprehensive about all the negatives about him and how once we get to 40 to 45 wins, which is something I've been saying too, that's when we can start to worry about if he's the guy. But he needs to get it. We need someone who can get us there first, and he can.
Yeah.
And we don't have to worry about that other stuff later. So to bring up Conley and to bring up Davis and that kind of talk again, I just think there's a point where you have to look at Mike Conley and say, okay, he makes $30 million, and this sounds like a very, I'm going to put my talking head hat on really quick, like I'm on Around the Horn or something, and say, who are you going to pay $30 million to? Who else are you going to pay with that Mike Conley money? Can you pay three different guys $10 million each that would supply you the value that Mike Conley would in 2 years? I have no doubt in my mind you would not be able to get that.
That's in a weird range where it's role players. That's like Rashawn Holmes money almost.
Yeah.
And is three of those guys at different positions even that much better?
How about one of those guys $20 million, one of those guys $10 million? Let's say Kelly Oubre gets $15 million and then someone else gets $12 million, like Thaddeus Young. Would you rather have Kelly Oubre and Thaddeus Young or Mike Conley? Like it's... I would rather have Mike Conley. I mean, it depends on how you feel about Oubre and everything. And
yeah.
Oubre's not a good example, but just off the top of my head, of a wing this year who's going to make like $15 million. And that's the other difference with free agency this year is that there are a lot of max guys, but after that, it's you get to Kelly and Terry Rozier and those names really quickly. The $15 to $18 million range, there aren't a lot of guys out there.
Yeah, that's a weird range. That's what I'm trying to think. It's hard. Anyway.
But do you agree with the overall sentiment that...
AD's different than Mike Conley, I mean.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I agree with you in that regard. Like, you need at least... Conley, you're not giving up DeAndre Ayton. That's the difference.
Yes.
And, yeah, number six pick, throw that away. Yeah, whatever. I'd give that up because you don't know what that's going to be. And you can look back in retrospect and be like, oh, they drafted Jarrett Culver, the all-star, but... You also get Mike Conley, who you know is an all-star, to help right the ship. And also, it matters that AD is trying to push his way out for a specific destination in mind. Pretty sure that's a real thing. And it also matters that the Golden State Warriors exist, the Houston Rockets exist, the Portland Trail Blazers exist. Like, going all in for next year to get maybe an eighth seed if they figure things out is a not a good move. Talk to me if it's not DeAndre Ayton, though, then.
Yeah.
I mean, it's... I would rather give up a bunch of assets and draft picks and, like, some of the forwards or something than even... I'd give up too much, maybe, to consider Anthony Davis, but not Ayton.
I guess the question more so is, where do you stand on the Suns looking at the situation right now and believing... I believe the way I described it was they've shown like an unreal amount of patience so far, given how much of a train wreck this has been and the whole point guard thing last year. They didn't make a panic trade in the middle of the year, even for Patrick Beverley or Jeremy Lin or anyone like that, that they could have gotten on an expiring deal. They've done nothing like that at all. And at what point does it feel like maybe the other side of the coin where we're getting too carried away with these types of guys, bringing them in, bringing in Mike Conley for only 2 years at the expense of whatever else it is, whereas building slowly and patiently is maybe the way to go, which is where it seems like James Jones's head has been at the whole time.
My whole perception of this is he was on for a year. People knew he was kind of in a desperate situation because he had that interim tag, which was dumb. And they knew he needed a point guard. And it just never came to fruition. Like, he got Kelly Oubre, he got Tyler Johnson, which different places in the spectrum of how good of deals those are, but they both seemed reasonable, right? Like, we can agree on that. So I honestly just want to see him go another season. And it's about timing, basically. When Memphis sees Ja Morant dropping 30 points and running point guard like kind of like a competent point guard, and they're like, all right, we don't need Mike Conley anymore. Let's get something. And every other team knows that he's on a giant contract. Maybe the Suns don't have to give up that much. I think that's what they're waiting for, is what I'm getting at. I think just nothing lined up where they could get a deal done last year. I think we'll find out if the panic moves come when it's Reggie Jackson or someone. I mean, those might be the moves where it's, we just want a competent point guard and then we can judge it at that time for whatever they give up. But yeah, I just think it's, I think they're in line with how we're thinking as far as they need to get some dudes in here, but I think they're also very cautious about what that deal is and not making a bad deal.
There's definitely someone in that office, whether it's Jones or one of the voices in Jones' heads that he bounces off, where it's like there's a part of him or someone in the office that's like looking at what happened with Sacramento and their draft picks, or just looking at all the picks that Boston has and looking at the teams that gave them those picks, the Brooklyn situation a couple of years ago, which is kind of hilarious now when you look back on it, and you just figured Brooklyn, with what they did, would be in a disastrous situation right now, but it actually... pretty smart stuff over there, the way they bounced back. But back to, I think the whole...
Like, what did they trade for D'Lo? They took on a Mozgov contract, right?
They took on Mozgov, I think, and then it wasn't really...
So, I mean, that's one example where it's, you take advantage of another team that really wants to do something, and yeah, maybe you pay Timothy Mozgov a crap ton of money, but look at where they are now with D'Lo. I don't know if they'll keep him, but they had success this year in a turnaround year because of that move. And yeah, that's a good example, actually, of what I'm thinking is...
Brooke they Lopez on the 27th pick is what they traded.
Yeah. Like, that's... Yeah, do that.
Mm-hmm.
You just got to wait, I think, because...
The main thing I'm getting at is the whole argument of something we talk about a lot is the Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum ceiling thing. And I think that's... The entire spectrum of that is what I'm kind of talking about, and just seeing fans kind of bounce around, and us included, bounce around that zone the past couple of weeks, even just forecasting the draft and free agency and being picky, not being as picky. I just think it's interesting, and I think it's gonna be more of, okay, how do we feel in late July about what if they get to late July and they still need a point guard, and Mike Conley's still there on the trade market, and everything is kind of, does their thought change? Do their expectations for what they want and say, okay, well, now we feel better about paying him $30 million because we thought we were going to get this point guard or that point guard, and it didn't work out.
I think about this a lot. We probably come across as like very hypocritical sometimes because we're like, do the trade for the good team, and sometimes we're like, you got to be patient.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's not fair the way we do it all the time with the way that, because they're sticking to one philosophy and we're saying that they should change it, and they're just trying to stick in with.
They actually know what gets offered.
Exactly.
That's the difference.
They also probably have a different plan every other month, and everything changes around them all the time. The Suns aren't the best example of this, probably. We should look at some more sound organizations for that tidbit, but I think that's an overarching, the cloud hanging over the offseason for me is just going to be what we expect, what they expect, and what actually gets done from those expectations and how it meets them or fails them.
That's a good way to throw us into the summer. We're here.
Draft workouts are going to be starting soon, so we'll be talking about those and some of the guys that stand out there. I personally am the least caught up and prepared on beyond the first round of the draft that I have been in like a really long time. Probably since I started like really covering the draft, so getting to know those guys more through the workouts here and watching more.
So you're not going to be able to help us find the next Rodion Skurix.
I remember bringing up Skurix like
I know
like 6 weeks before the draft, and it was sad and true.
Was it sad or was it commitment?
It's always a mix of both with me. Is just being embarrassing but committed. That's my bumper sticker on my car. Review us on iTunes and all that stuff. Apple Podcasts, whatever they call it. Just stop changing the name, Apple. Just figure it out. iTunes, iMusic, whatever you guys are. Don't I sound like Monty Williams right now with his Facetagram or whatever he called it?
I wrote down FaceFam. I don't know if he said FaceGram or he said InstaTweet, though.
Catherine had it somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah, I have it pulled up.
Well, look us up on the InstaTweet and the Facetagram and the FaceFams and review us and subscribe and follow us on all the social medias that you want or don't want. Once again, as I say at every conclusion of the podcast, it's up to you. You decide. You make that choice. Whatever country you're in, you know, it's all up to you. We encourage freedom of choice here. So, I hope you take that choice and tune in next week. Wasn't that a great little swing around at the end? Okay, bye everyone.